John Chillag, Reel 6.
The camp essentially, this is the prisoner's camp, not the SS camp attached to it, consisted of two parts, the main camp and what was called the little camp. The little camp housed a few sort of special services and the infirmary. And by that time I was so weak that they took me straight to and I said they took me, they assisted me to crawl to the infirmary, which was infirmary only in name, really. It was a convenient place because the crematoria were just a few yards away. It was much simpler to shift people from one side to the other. The other special services I mentioned in the little camp. There was a movie, a cinema, for good performing, well behaving prisoners, mainly criminals and some politicals, many Germans. And also for those who have been extremely good and really wanted it, was also a problem. But the main complex was this infirmary.
Who would the women have been?
They were prisoners. Buchenwald itself was a man's prison. There were a few women there. There was a special compound for politically important people. There were some prime ministers and their wives from France and Belgium and wherever. When I talk of the post-war period, I will tell a very interesting story about this.
But would the women have come from those,
no.
from that population?
No, not from that population. They were from any camp, anywhere. Probably from Auschwitz, Bergen-Belsen, or wherever. Some were volunteers hoping for better things, and some were forced into it without any option. But anyway, I was in the infirmary, only that in name. We were in bunks about four levels high, and since it was only the weakest people who were in there, first of all, I don't know how some of them crawled up to the upper two levels, certainly once they were up there, there was no way they could come down for food or anything else. I was on the second level, which wasn't that bad, except for getting all the excrement and everything from the top.
Wait, did you have a disease, John, or was it just absolute weakness?
My disease was extreme final weakness. A few days after arriving in Buchenwald, the camp was liberated on the 11th of April, and when I was weighed, I suppose a week or so after that, I weighed 56 pounds. If anyone compares that with their weight, it should give some indication. But let me go back a little bit. We were just lying on those bunks, and we were too weak virtually to do anything. And I wouldn't have survived more than a day or two after the liberation. I was lucky to survive even then. The camp camp was liberated in two ways. Some of the original or longer serving prisoners in the camp had been there by then 7-8 years and working in nearby factories. Over the years they had made or acquired some guns or pistols or whatever, and ammunition. And when the Americans were literally about a mile or two away from the camp, they started to self-liberate the camp. It wouldn't have succeeded as such, but the Americans were by that time so close that with an urgent clandestine radio message, they encouraged the Americans to move a bit faster, and indeed they turned up within minutes or half an hour or so. And they liberated the camp. Now, this was in calendar time, the first major, or first any, concentration camp liberated by the Western powers. Yes, the Russians got to Auschwitz by January 45, and presumably some other camps in Poland and so on. But Buchenwald was the first camp liberated on the 11th of April. And it was the first time anything like that was seen. And the American soldiers, they were trying to give anything they had. Chewing gum, bully beef, and of course that was not the best diet for us. And accidentally, unintentionally, it caused the death of many more people.
Do you remember your first sights and awareness of liberation, John?
Very little, because I was in extremes. I mean, literally, I wouldn't have survived more than a day or two after that. Then the next day, the Americans flew in the press, whatever press they had in Europe, or in from the States. And the Americans flew in congressmen, press, and whatever. And indeed, two or three days after that, the British parliamentary mission was occurring. And one of the first reporters on the scene was Ed Murrow. And Ed Murrow made a broadcast that is better known than Richard Dimbleby's He Made of Broken Bells. The transcript of the Ed Murrow broadcast you have seen, and there is a copy in the museum and in many cases elsewhere. Anyway, we were liberated. We were in these extreme conditions, and we were rushing in field hospitals that they were setting up in the old SS barracks. And others moved into one of these. But before leaving the actual barrack scene, I could mention, I should mention, that there were a number of people in that barrack that are much better known than me. There was Eddie Wiesel. We were just a couple of bunks away. Eddie Wiesel, Nobel Prize winning human activist. There was Max Perkal, who is now American Pulitzer Prize winning author, and his name quite often appears on credits and the end of films, and some others. I was left out of that list at that stage, probably because I didn't become famous enough. Anyway, we were removed to the field hospitals and gradually nursed back to health. I was still extremely weak. I've been given God only knows how many blood, plasma, serum, or whatever transfusions. And even today, when I had to give a blood sample for medical purposes, the doctors say, well, yes, it is group A, whatever, but no, it isn't that. And they can't quite work out what it is. Know that this is the reason, because I'm so mixed up as far as the blood goes. And as far as I'm aware, I didn't come from Mars. Anyway, gradually I was nursed back to some sort of health. And then there was, liberated as we were, another bombshell. The Americans had to leave, or the Americans had to evacuate the camp. The survivors were still in a very weak condition. And when I was well enough to move around in the camp, one day I came across the various barracks or buildings, particularly after liberation, were sort of national groups. And I was talking with somebody at the Austrian building, and it turned out to be Benedikt Kautsky, who was a well-known politician, economist in Austria. And probably far less famous than his father, Karl Kautsky. But he was in the Austrian bloc, obviously. And then we started talking, and he found out what my name was. He asked me whether I'm related to my father, obviously, was. And it turned out that he was part of the political circle. My father was involved in the 1930s. Before the Americans had to evacuate the area to make way for the Russians, which is a story in itself that only in the last few months can be told. The Western Allies bartered with the Russians territory, Eastern Germany to wit, so that the Americans, the British, and the French could retain a foothold in Berlin itself. And they had to evacuate Pontier near Buchenwald in Weimar around it in the next few weeks. And the Americans try to make sure that nothing is left behind that can be used in war reparation. And by that time, I was well enough to supervise some Germans from Weimar loading the equipment from the nearby factories. And more importantly, in the details of work processes, patterns, and documentation, and so on. And these were loaded onto trains and have moved on to the west. And not very much after that, they had to physically evacuate the whole area to make way for the Russians. And people were given the choice of either moving to the west or going back to wherever their home was in the west or elsewhere. And at that stage, whilst I knew that obviously my father has died, I hope that somebody from the family will have survived. I opted to go back to Hungary and through Czechoslovakia and so on by train, a very long train journey, something about 3 or 4 weeks, because there wasn't enough fuel for a train, and lines were bombed, and the priority was low, and all that.
Had you been given resources, like new clothes and money, passes, this sort of thing?
Basic resources we were given when we left the camp. But I at least managed to sort of personally enlarge a little bit on that. I mean, in the camp, from people who were taken in direct, all their valuables were taken away. So all of us, when we left, could take a watch. Now, I know this is not necessarily physical comfort, but that is only by accident, in front of one of the barrack buildings. I found a fairly large quantity of Hungarian money. I didn't know what value it would be, but I picked it up. And I suppose in today's money that may be £500. So it was real money, which a bit later when I got back into Hungary and restarted the family business, was quite a lot of money to start the business up with. And for the journey, obviously we exchanged our striped prison garb for civilian clothes, but whether they were just as ill-fitting and bad as the prison garb is open to dispute. But yes, they were clothes, and no longer wooden clogs but shoes. The Americans had given us some food once we left American jurisdiction. I have a feeling that the camp identification document that we been all given gave us sort of certain, we were out of Germany by that time. Americans delivered us to prison, BFA. So we were in Czechoslovakia, and identity documents, if you can call it that, give a certain rights, rations, or what. But we were on a, what shall I say, a non-moving train. It was more stationary than moving. But you couldn't disappear for any length of time because there was just a whistle. And 5 minutes later, the train moved off another 5 miles.
And another thing, before we go on to the your return to Hungary, taking food, you know, obviously you were very ill when the Americans came, and probably that might have saved your life regarding food. But how long did it take you before you could eat normally, would you say? Did you have to be very careful for some time?
One had to be very careful for some time to try to put this into a time frame, if I can still remember. We were liberated in 1945 on the 11th of April. And I went back to, or left the camp to go back to Hungary in August. So there was a 3 month time span to build me up. And obviously it was a gradual process. Even though it was field hospital, it was under proper medical care, so we've been given what we can survive with, rather than put to a table and said, here's the food. So, I got back to some sort of health. And as I say, there was a period when I could move around the camp and get my watch and find the money and speak to my father's friend.
And the other thing I was wondering about, John, you know, you've spoken about Ed Murrow and the speech he made, and you have since seen a transcript of that. What do you yourself make of that speech regarding the reality of what the Americans found? Do you think he gave the right sort of impression to the world?
Sure he did.
He said the right thing.
Yes. And obviously, he was a newspaper man, and he knew how to use the words. Story itself could not be better put.
And the Americans, how did you get on with the Americans? Did you have any English?
Not enough to go by. Yes, thank you, please, whatever, but good morning. But no. You see, something that people in England or in the West forget, that the territories the Germans or whoever came from to go into these camps forgot there is a world outside. Schools no longer had French, schools no longer had English. The first language in schools was German, first foreign language. And the second foreign language was Italian. The only language that has gone on since year dot was Latin, which helped with various other languages linguistically, but perhaps not all that much for English. Although some German and English may not be that far away. So I had Italian and German in school. German I didn't need because I spoke it anyway. Italian I found useful only once in those years. I'm not talking now of more current times, but when I was still in school. Badoglio's son came to Hungary, and our class was the first class in our school that had Italian rather than French. So when he came with his train through town, our class was lined up on the platform, and we addressed him and his cohorts in Italian. Big deal. But English I didn't have in school, and I just had a few words.
So here you are on your slow but moving train, as you say, going home.
Yeah. In fact, I mentioned earlier that my mother's family came from the area that was Slovakia, and I had some relations. I did have some relations that had been living along the railway route we took to Hungary. By that time it was Slovakia again. And I knew that the train will stop, or has stopped, and will stay there for an hour or two in the village where one of my relatives used to live. And I managed to go into a village to find out whether anybody knows anything about them. And all they knew that they were taken with another train to Auschwitz, much the same time as we, and nobody ever heard of them since, and obviously they were perished. But eventually the train got into Budapest, and remember that I did not live or didn't come from Budapest itself. That's 100 miles to the west from Europe. So I had very little relations or knowledge of Budapest itself. Although there was a year when I had some health problems, and I was staying in a sort of sanatorium in Budapest. And the only people I could really go in Budapest was that sanatorium, and they knew the family and various bits of it. And I went out there, and obviously they welcomed me to mind. But they couldn't tell very much about anybody. But they did know that one of my aunts has survived in Budapest. And so from this place I could go to where my aunt was. So I got back that way to the family. And she has survived in Budapest. She was living in Budapest. She managed to survive because she had a passport given by one of the neutral countries. I have a feeling she had some South American passport. But many people in Budapest have survived through the action of Karl Fallenberg.